But when I got the phone call at 2 p.m, it was the producer, and he's lovely. And he was like, look, you know, we explained to you the reserve position. And he went into explaining it again. And I was like to my mum, like, I haven't got it. Like, and I instantly felt disappointed.
Oh, okay.
And then he said, but we don't want to offer you a reserve position. We want you on the show. And I was like, oh my God.
Welcome to season 2, episode 3 of The Entrepreneur Experiment. This week we have someone who I've been wanting to get on the podcast for a long time. Me and Pamela started exchanging messages a good while ago, just after The Apprentice started airing in the UK. We started chatting about coming on the podcast, and due to various commitments with The Apprentice, she's actually not able to until she finishes the series. So I got her on as soon as I could. And just something about Pamela connected with me. Just when I was watching her stories and watching her on The Apprentice, she's the exact kind of entrepreneur I had in mind when starting this podcast. She's someone who started just from nothing, just from an idea, and from that idea created something physical in her hand, into the shelves in the shop, and made it a success. And we're going to try something new this week. Last week, just to jump back, I had a call with a professional podcasting company and to discuss the growth of the podcast. I'm always trying to make it better. This was something that started, as you know, as a very casual thing and has just kind of grown organically itself. But I want to make it better. I want to improve each week. I want to make it a better listen. Podcasts are such an intimate thing that I know myself and I'm listening to something and there's just something not quite right. It can ruin the whole experience. So with Pamela's episode, it's actually an hour and a half. But what I'm doing is splitting it into two episodes, this week and next week, obviously enough. Episode 1 and 2. And I think the podcast lends itself to it. I don't think there's every podcast could do it because the subject might be strong enough. But Pamela's story is just so good that I think this format is going to work. As always, I love hearing people's feedback. So if you think this format works and the shorter episodes are better, I'm very conscious people's commute can be 30, 40 minutes. So ideally an episode maybe should be that length. I don't know. Maybe you enjoy the podcast being a little bit longer. They're generally around an hour to an hour and 15, depending on the guest and the editing process. So if you like this format, do let me know. I'll be testing a number of different formats throughout the season, but it really depends on what you guys like. I won't talk much further as I'm sure you're dying to get into Pamela's episode. In part 1, we talk about The Apprentice. As you heard on the intro, Pamela did incredibly well on The Apprentice in the UK, the version just gone. So we talk all about that. I'm a bit of an Apprentice nerd, so I loved the behind the scenes. We talk about how it's filmed, what parts are real. What shocked me was how much like real life it is. They recreate real life very, very closely, and how much pressure it is. So you'll discover it's 2 months from start to finish. So just for a second, imagine you were taken out of your life for 2 months. What effect would that have on your business, your job, your career, your family, your social life? So it's a massive, massive commitment. So I loved discovering that. We talked about Pamela's brand, Moxie Loves, how she started, where the idea came from, and where it's going to go next now that she's had such a huge success on The Apprentice. I really enjoyed this chat. I think you're going to too. Here is part 1 of my chat with Pamela Laird. Pamela, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
I think this is the longest lead into an episode we've ever had.
I'm glad.
No pressure.
No, definitely not.
So we've been kind of chatting back and forth on this episode for a while. Maybe just explain why. Let's go ahead and start.
Well, that's a good question. I mean, I've listened to your podcast. Actually, somebody shared it with me a while ago and said, you know, have you listened to this? I was like, wow. And I'm a big podcast person. It's on in the car when I'm driving and loved it. And yeah, obviously, when I went on The Apprentice last year, I shared it and then we started to chat. So yeah, I'm delighted to be here. I can't believe you asked me. I was just sharing it because I feel like so many really established entrepreneurs have done it with you. So yeah, I'm delighted.
It's cool though, and it's been good to get you on. It's something we kind of look forward to for a while. And even when I said you were coming on, a lot of people were messaging going, oh my God, I got it. Because like The Apprentice is still, I know we were chatting about this a while ago, but The Apprentice is still a big deal.
It is. And I think it was the 15th year when I did it. So
really?
Yeah, I think they had the biggest budget they've ever had. You know, we obviously went to South Africa and even some of the tasks were just really impressive. So yeah, I think it was a good year to go on from my perspective because it was so much that we got done. And yeah, people do love a bit of Lord Sugar, don't they?
I'm a big fan.
Are you?
I've read his book. I'm drinking the Lord Shudagar Kool-Aid.
Okay, like, okay.
Because he's lasted. Like, not many people have started a show like that, any kind of show, and lasted mm-hmm. 15 seasons.
I think there's a reason. Obviously, I did Dragon's Den in Ireland, which we can chat about, but when I looked at The Apprentice, a friend sent me the application and was like, you have to apply. I was like, really? I hadn't watched it. My mum had, and I dipped in and out. But when I spotted, I said, okay, well, what's he invested in? Who's won? And where are they now? Most of them are turning over millions. And one, by example, came third, actually, where I came. And she has a cosmetics brand. Susie Maz, her name. They're turning over £22 million a year.
Wow.
So this is like, okay, wow, this is a serious show. It may be a lot of TV in it, but at the same time, when business is business after the show, he really makes a go at it. And he
interesting to hear, because you do hear all the negative stories.
You do.
And obviously everyone loves the negative stories. You hear of, oh, the investment never went through, and oh, it fell apart, oh, they don't talk anymore. So it's good to hear. So you did your due diligence.
I did, on that end. Yeah, due diligence.
So when you looked it up, so someone sent it to you, the application, they're like, oh, you should go for this.
Yeah, and I really thought, like, no, not a chance. But then I looked at that and I thought, you know, I'm in this position now where I'm looking for investment. I don't feel as comfortable in the traditional investment environment, which is obviously going to venture capitalists or whatever, the angel investors. I thought, oh my God, it's so far out of reach for me. I think it'd be too hard, or, you know, I was a bit nervous. And I looked and I thought, well, you know, this is probably what's missing. Instead of trying to give someone 10%, 15%, look at maybe a business partnership. Is that why Lord Shudagar is so successful? He takes 50%, but he also has 50% of the risk, you know? And I think that that also makes it a really interesting combination, because he gives a real go at the businesses.
Okay. He's one of the biggest names in the UK and Ireland, in Europe, I think, in business. You think the top five, maybe he'd be up there.
Definitely.
So what was the process like? How did you... So you filled out the form, obviously, online. Don't know why I'm making a pen sign on my hand. So you filled it out online.
I did.
What happened then?
So I filled it out online, sent it off, and started obsessively trying to find episodes to watch, because I was like, what am I getting myself into? And mum was like, oh, and she was trying to explain to me, and I was like, no, I actually need to watch it.
Yeah.
The only one that sprung to mind was like the scavenger hunt episode, and that just always freaked me out, because I was like, how can you be good at finding random items?
Oh,
and
yes, you're
a business person.
So
that kind of stuck in my mind, as being like, oh God, is that what the whole show is, just one big joke? So I was watching episodes, and mum and I were trying to watch one a night, and then I was like, okay, this is kind of cool. There's like marketing tasks, sales, you know, okay, I could do that. I'm not good at that, but, you know. Then I got an email to say that I'd been successful, and I got given a time and a day. And here's me thinking, okay, I don't know. Am I going to go in and there'll be one person? Like, what will happen? So nervous. Flew over to London. Got there like 20 minutes early. And there were thousands of people there, all holding the same letter.
Oh, you basically, no.
Yeah.
Like the X Factor.
Pretty much. So you had to print off kind of your, more detailed version of the form, have like a passport photo, a few other bits like, and we were queuing. Like I was queuing for an hour.
Was it in like a hotel or like
no,
a conference center?
In their head office, actually. The production company's head office, which is huge. And eventually I got to the desk thing where you check in, and they said, oh, you've flown over from Ireland. Do you have a flight? And I said, I do. And they wrote down the name, the time of the flight. And then I sort of...
you were in and out, Cindy.
Yes. Okay. They sort of moved me along. I could tell, because people I'd been queuing with didn't get to the next stage as fast. And so, yeah, it was like loads of random tasks that day. Like, tell me about yourself in 15 seconds. And they don't really tell you how you've done. You just get called out and moved along, or you get shown out. So when I wasn't shown out, I was like,
that's brutal.
Yeah, you go up in the lift to the next floor, and then the next bit, and then you get moved on, and then you're in the lift. If you go up, you're like, okay, I'm going up, like I'm not going home.
It's like a computer game.
Yeah, pretty much. And then at the end is my audition tape, which you guys have probably seen if you've gone online or whatever. It's my little piece to camera that was done at the end of that day.
Day.
Yeah. So
did you know what you were going over for? Did you know, okay, I'm going to have to do this, this, and this, and this, and this?
No, I hadn't a clue. I had no idea what it was going to be. And I'm sure they, like, obviously they ask us not to share all the details of the auditions, because they want it to be fair. And I think you can't really go in a contrived way. You've got to be yourself.
Yeah.
And so I went in totally just trying, I had no notion what they wanted to hear. And I didn't really know what I was going to say. I just said whatever I felt at the time.
Okay.
And I'm sure, like, if you look at some of the other audition tapes, it's like, no one will get in my way. I'm going to stand on whoever it takes, you know, all of that.
Some of them are horrific. You're watching through your hands going, oh no, don't say that you're the superhero equivalent of business or whatever.
It's terrible. And I don't think I said anything that I don't stand by, thank God, except I hate my voice, so that's just a thing, I think, when you watch yourself back. But yeah, then there were two more rounds when I was, so I didn't know how I got on that day. I just left.
So you do the day, okay, thanks, Pam, yeah. I'll see you later.
Go home, went home, had no idea. NDA, so couldn't tell anyone. Obviously, my mum knew, but got home, that was fine. Then I got an email a week later saying, got a second audition. Flew over for that. That was a bit more intense, and there was a lot more of kind of the apprentice experience as a candidate. A lot of waiting around, standing, not talking. So there was, I think, a few of us.
Not talking?
Yeah, they don't want you to strategize, which is definitely a big thing of the process. So
okay,
it's kind of like a bit of a school environment at times, which I do understand, because if there's 16 of you, very hard to keep people under control. Like, we're all adults, you know, so I get it.
When you go back the second day,
yeah,
are you like down to hundreds or tens?
There
or
were 16 people, but I knew there were multiple dates of 16.
I get you.
So I knew I wasn't the only date.
Okay.
But I didn't know how many. And yeah, so I had no idea how I got on that day either, because I don't tell you, you just leave. And then I got an email to say I was invited over again. So I went over, and this was a bit more, look, this is what to expect from the show, this is what your life will be, this is what you're giving up, this is how much time. And that was kind of like, okay, God, this is really serious.
So you've done three stages. You've done the online form, day one, day two, and you're back over for a third day.
And they do a psych evaluation, probably just to make sure you're not like unstable. And yeah, it was a good chat, so I was able to ask any of the questions that I had.
Oh, what was the final day then? That was just like an in-depth interview, or was that tasks again?
No, that was just chat. Like, I think they were just making sure you understood, and the psych evaluation.
Okay.
And then I went home, and there is a process where they have like reserve positions. So they make it very clear that you don't have to be a reserve position, but if you are, you have to follow through the process the same way in security, that maybe someone will drop out and that you were there ready to take their place. But if they don't, then you just have to go home.
How do you mean? Like, so at like what stage?
So after the last kind of psych evaluation, the chat, if you got through, you would have to prepare the outfits. You have to kind of send photos of the outfits for approval. You've got to get vaccinations. We didn't know we were going to South Africa, but we all had to get those.
Okay.
And then like a few kind of things, and then fly over obviously, and wait to go into the process. So in the hope that someone would drop out, you'd get in.
Very last minute.
Very last minute.
Okay.
So
that'd be horrific.
That'd be so hard. So when I got the phone, they said, look, we're going to call you either way at 2 p.m. on this day. And I was like, right. So I'm sitting there with my mum, and I'm like, oh my God, mum, like, what? Oh, I don't know. Do I want it? Like, at that stage, I was like, this is a huge commitment.
Yeah. How did you feel at that stage? Because I'd imagine it's such a mixed emotion.
It was massively mixed. I knew at that stage that it was going to commit me to, at the best case, 8 weeks gone to make it to the final.
Mm.
Worst case, could be home in a week. So in my mind, I was like, well, I don't know how long it's going to be. It could really affect my business while I'm gone, but it also could be a week and I could be home and I could have done the apprentice, you know. That was kind of my mind, and I really didn't know whether I wanted or not. But when I got the phone call at 2 p.m. it was the producer, and he's lovely, and he was like, look, you know, we explained to you the reserve position, and he went into explaining it again, and I was like to my mum, like, I haven't got it, like, and I instantly felt disappointed.
So you truly did want it. Okay.
And then he said, but we don't want to offer you a reserve position. We want you on the show. And I was like, oh my God. And like,
why was he doing that?
He was just trying to wind me up.
Oh, right, okay.
He's funny. Like, he's a nice guy. And he's like, I have to have a bit of fun. So yeah, I knew that there was no question about it. I wanted it.
Okay.
So I'm glad he did that, because it really gave me that. Okay, I need it.
Okay.
Absolutely. And then that was like, I had 3 weeks to get myself ready. Yeah.
Manic.
I know. Getting vaccinations, getting them, and the girl's like, so where are you going? I was like, I don't know.
Just getting up with a crack.
She's like, wait, what? I was like, oh, it's a job, I'm not sure. She's like, oh, okay. And then I was looking at all the countries that these vaccinations were for, and I was like, can we go to India, China? Like, so South Africa it was.
That's so, and how did you prepare? Like, what did you do for those 3-4 weeks?
I went shopping and a few of my outfits were rejected colour wise because they were obviously trying to plan everybody's outfit together for the boardroom. And so, yeah, a few of my outfits were rejected. So I literally had to keep buying new dresses and sending photos, and eventually mine got approved. But
do you
have
to plan it out? Like, this week I'm going to wear this, this week I'm going to wear this? Or do you say these are all my outfits for the boardroom?
See, basically, if you wear a dress, you have three options. If you wear a suit, you can just change your top. So the now, in hindsight, obviously, three of the girls had suits of the colour dresses I had. So I was never going to be allowed to wear that colour because they had the same suit every time. So I had to get three colours that were not going to clash.
And did you say, okay, I'm going to have a particular style?
Like, I don't know. I think I definitely have a style. It's just like I wear dresses all the time. So it was always going to be a dress for me.
Okay.
And I tried to wear Irish and buy Irish, but they were all rejected for the colour. So yeah, I had to buy a UK brand in the end, but I bought an Irish boutique. So yeah, I did. That was really important to me to wear something as close to Irish as I could.
Yeah.
But I couldn't tell anyone. So I couldn't like get dresses from people. I had to buy them.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. That's the kind of stuff you always wonder about. You're like, oh, I wonder if they're just given clothes or they just... That's bonkers. I imagine they make more sense just to like go, okay,
yeah,
here's an outfit of 100, pick your 10.
Yeah, no, you have to do it yourself.
Okay.
Yeah.
So 3-4 weeks running around.
Getting clothes. Yeah.
And how did you plan to be away for that long?
There's no way to plan it. I think I was so pessimistic or maybe reserved. I honestly thought I'd be home in a week or two.
Okay.
I made no plan to be gone that long. I considered how it would affect my business, which I knew, look, I have customers mostly via my distributor who are great, fine. But like it requires constant managing. And I knew that if I wasn't here, that would be affected.
Mm.
But I had to weigh it up like, well, is it going to affect me great in the end? Like, is it going to give me a massive injection of sales? You know, like how will it affect my business long term? And I did think it would be positive, whatever happened. But like, I thought I'd be back in 2 weeks. I was like, I can't prepare to be gone and come home.
Yeah. You don't want to be overselling it either.
No, I couldn't tell anyone. Because anyway, my mum and boyfriend were allowed to know, but they were both NDA'd. So that was it.
We talked about this briefly. How the hell do you do that? Like, how the hell do you like go, see ya?
I know. Well, I gave my mum my phone to have because I thought like nobody's going to believe I have no phone. And there's no point in me taking it with me and turning it off. So I gave it to her to reply to anything businessy that would come through my emails.
That's a lot of work for her as well.
Yeah, and like social media, I was like, just repost things, like don't ignore things, but don't post anything, but just, you know, like if someone sends something through, just like share it or whatever. So she did that. I can't believe she did it for 2 months though. Like she had to reply and pretend to be mean to people. Yeah, it was funny to think back now. When I read some of the messages, I'm like, that was definitely not me. Yeah.
And then... we'll actually jump back. We'll actually pause The Apprentice there because I'm sure you're kind of also a little bit sick talking about it. Jump me back to starting your current business.
Mm-hmm.
How did that start?
It started, my mum has had a beauty salon since I can remember, like I was 2. And I'd always be there after work or after school with her in work. And I always loved the beauty industry. I think it was a natural way of me going into business. And I worked there as a teenager, loved it. And then I think I thought, oh, like nails would be my thing. I was good at nails. I did all my kind of training and qualification when I was in transition year.
Okay.
And so I was like ready made when I left school. I had no interest in college, like whatsoever. Okay. I was like, no, I want to work. I'd always worked. And a mum had an opportunity. She was a distributor at the time for a nail brand. And she had an opportunity to look at maybe opening a nail bar under that brand, so like a branded concession. And so we talked about it and we approached House of Fraser. So I actually opened the nail bar with that brand and ran that when I left school at 18.
Wow.
Yeah, so I was there for 4 years and at the start I loved it. We actually gained more space, hired more staff. It was extremely successful.
Was that Dundrum?
Dundrum, yeah.
Oh wow, so busy spot.
Definitely. And we were right beside the lifts. Like it was great.
Mm.
And I slowly realized as we got bigger that I was just managing people. It went from loving doing nails to where is this person? What time are they supposed to be in at? What are they doing? And I was like, God, I really hate this.
Okay.
Like I knew it kind of was a switch overnight. I was like, this really isn't scalable for me because I don't like managing people.
Mm.
That's not what I want my job to be. I like doing nails. I'm not even doing them anymore.
Okay.
I don't even like nails in a way, like as a business. I just thought I can't do this. And I was like to mum, this is not what I want. And I watched her in the beauty salon. No matter how many staff we had, no matter how big it got, she always had to be there at some stage.
Mm.
either the face or, you know, and it felt like...
It's a relationship business.
Yeah, it is. And I just felt like, how scalable is this? Like what can I do more than I'm doing now? I can have five of these and hate every one of them the same way. You know, that's okay. How I felt. I thought, look, I'm going to go back to salon, regroup and rethink.
Okay.
And at the same time, I got headhunted by another brand to start their nail bar in the airport, just to help hire the staff and manage it. And that kind of was exciting for me.
Mm.
But it definitely made me realize I could not work for anybody else. Okay. I was 8 months there and I liked it, but I was like, no, I need to go back and work for myself. What do I want to do? So before I finished up there, I started looking at distribution, and I thought, well, we've done distribution before, we've supplied other salons, other spas with this nail brand.
Mm.
Now this nail brand has put the products into Marks & Spencer's UK, which filtered into the Irish Marks & Spencer's, and our stockists went ballistic. It was a very exclusive product. It was in a lot of spas around the country.
Okay.
And now it's on the high street.
Gotcha.
So here we are. We put all this work into a brand and they've side traded into the market, which they can do. And there's nothing we can do to stop it. I thought, well, I can't be a distributor because I'm going to face that problem again. So what if I started my own brand? Like, what would I do? What products would I have?
Mm-hmm.
So I just really explored it and got really excited and thought, well, there's loads of products I would love to have that don't exist, or exist in a format within the salon world, but maybe not on the consumer market.
Interesting. Okay.
So I kind of brought all that together, and yeah, I just knew exactly. It just all the pieces fell together.
Explain to people what a distributor is, because I think a lot of people are kind of you need a distributor. What does it actually do?
So when we were a distributor, we saw somebody's brand we liked in the UK. They weren't in the Irish market. We said, look, we'll distribute your product. We will bring it to salons and spas, approach them, sell it, and make a commission on the sales.
Okay.
So that's what we did. Today, when I have distributors, it's probably slightly bigger. There's a lot more logistics involved because I'm kind of FMCG, you know, like it's boxes are being moved a lot quicker. So they generally hold the relationships with the buyers, and they are the in-between from the brand to the store.
Okay. Yeah, I always kind of like to ask very obvious
questions.
Yeah,
I hope I explained it right. Yeah.
No, because it's still one of those things you hear thrown around so many times, you're like, okay.
So and and there's different distributors. Obviously, like Avon Girls could be considered distributors in a way because they're sales, but this is more like you buy the stock in as a distributor and then you take the risk of selling it on.
Yeah.
You know, so I thought, well, I won't be a distributor for somebody else to do whatever they want with the brand, and then
you got
I'm
burned
left.
On that one.
Exactly.
Then, you know, you kind of see your control was minimal.
Yes.
So what was the next step then?
Then I realized how excited I got by products. So it was about, okay, well, here's 10. And I was like, right, so here, where will we start? Okay, that product, I like the look of that. Let's try that, find a manufacturer for that. And
so you had all these ideas.
Yes.
Okay.
So I just started thinking about it and talked to my friends, talked to people in the industry. And then I realized that, like, my first product that I explored, like, the minimum order quantity was 60,000 units.
Wow.
So I was like, okay, I can't do 10. Like, I had no 60, money. 000. Like,
wow.
I not a cent of savings, nothing. My mom was like, don't worry about the money. Just, it's going to take so long for you to get this over the line. Worry about it when you get to the stage where you have to pay for it. Just keep going. And she was so right. It was the best
advice. Yeah, it's really
so
interesting advice.
Got the packaging, got the branding. Yes to this sample. No, yes, no. Back and forth until we got it right.
How did you do that, though? I think that's what puts a lot of people off. Everyone has ideas. Everyone has ideas. So, you know, we all have that one.
We do.
How did that work? Like, how did you, like, literally day one, what did you do?
I don't know exactly what came first. I think I knew that I could identify the first product, which was a liquid-filled cotton bud. I think then I said, okay, that's what I'm going to start with.
Mm.
I just feel like that would be a really cool on its own product.
Yeah.
And it was about finding, well, who makes cotton buds? Because maybe if they make cotton buds, they could do this.
Okay.
So I knew that the mechanism existed because I'd found the patents for it, mainly for the medicinal sector. So they had liquid-filled iodine swabs, liquid-filled alcohol swabs for single use.
So you were just out there on the internet trying to find similar-ish stuff.
Yeah, that I could adapt, exactly. Because I knew I wasn't going to be able to reinvent the wheel necessarily. So I thought, well, if they can fill it with alcohol and iodine, surely they can make a solution and for eye cleansing and put it in. So I found about 10 cotton bud manufacturers literally online. Like, I trailed the internet. Got so many samples that were wrong. Like, literally, no.
So you'd bang an email going, look, this is what I want. Can you work on something like this?
Yeah, and I worked with a trade company, Kotra, I think, when I was trying to get Korean manufacturers. I didn't end up liking their samples in the end, but that was one way I managed to kind of, because the language barrier in Korea is quite difficult, or it was at the time, Whereas the Chinese speak extremely well English via email, so they were much easier to deal with.
As so you were looking all over the globe.
You're I was just like, I went to like Europe. None of them could do it in Europe. They all just made standard cotton buds. I knew it would be China and Korea then at that stage. So it was really narrowing down my manufacturer and who the capabilities, what packaging we could do, because I wanted them singly wrapped, because coming from a salon background, I thought, well, they're going to be hygienic.
Okay.
You can put them in your kit if you're a makeup artist. If you're traveling, you can throw them in your bag. That was my focus. And so it was really who could do what I wanted. And
so you had a very, very, very specific idea what you wanted.
Absolutely. And in the end, only one could do it. And it was the person I liked the sample. And we went back and forth on the sample for ages with the formula. But then when we got it right, I was like, okay, I have no money. What am I going to do? And
how do you do that though? How do you like, this sort of one, blah, blah, blah. Okay, Pamela, through time, just drop through your mailbox.
Yeah, even less. Like the Chinese for samples are incredible.
Really?
Honestly, I've sent emails of products I wanted to do to one of my manufacturers who makes a few things. And they're like, yeah, okay, it might take us, you know, 3 weeks to do it. I'm like, grand. And they're like, actually, we've done... They send it to me and like it could be eight. Now, all you're paying for every time is the freight, air freight to send it over. Like normally FedEx, UPS. So it's expensive. It could be 200 euro just to get one sample.
Right.
But in my mind, it's worth it because if you look at any of the manufacturing close to home, you could be spending a couple of grand on your first sample. Mm.
And it's going to be 60,000 units anyway. You can't afford to
no.
make a balls of it. Okay.
No, you can't. So I ended up negotiating with my manufacturer that I would commit to 60,000 units, but I would only take 30. For the first load.
Okay.
And like never even crossed my mind that they wouldn't sell. Genuinely.
Yeah.
Didn't even consider it. Like I don't know what kind of world I was living in. Now when I look
at the kind of need that blind belief.
I think you do, but now when I look at the MOQs, I'm like, can we push back on this? A bit risky. And at the time I was like, no, this is gonna sell, it's gonna fly, it's gonna be great. And
I think so, you need that. I think for your first one you kind of need this blind belief of course, this is such a good idea.
Yes. And so I went to the bank with that blind belief and I said, this is my idea. I had a mock-up done by our packaging designer. No actual sample yet, like of the complete product. No, because you have to pay a deposit to get your printed sample. Like obviously everything I was getting was just generic. And so he believed in it. He believed in me and I got a stocking loan of 50,000 euro.
Wow.
Yeah. Which was everything. Like it was how I got off. Like I could have done nothing without that.
I think that's such a good lesson though, is not to be deterred by the barriers that you put in your head as well. Like there are real barriers, but like you weren't deterred by the lack of a stockist, you weren't deterred by the lack of, you know, a manufacturer, you know, lack of money, which is the biggest one.
Blind.
But isn't it amazing though how you can just will something into existence sometimes?
Totally. And I think people really do always say, where do you start? And I honestly don't know what I did first. But I was doing everything at the same time.
You're moving.
I wasn't waiting for the sample to be right while continuing with the packaging design. I literally did it all in tandem because I thought, well, like one thing's going to take a while, so I might as well just keep going with the other bit.
Yeah. And you had that belief.
Yeah.
The brand, did you have the brand then or no?
I had the brand then, Moxie.
Great name.
It started off just Moxie and then trademark issue.
We've all had those, don't worry. I have a letter on my desk over there.
Okay. I know those letters. We had a tampon company in Australia.
Okay.
Which the number nomenclature number that you fall under on trademarks, female hygiene fell under cosmetics. So they had a worldwide trademark and
on the name Moxie.
Moxie.
Okay. Where did that come from?
With an E, M-O-X-I-E, but of course, so Moxie's in the dictionary. Yeah. So it means like if you've got determination or drive.
Yeah, but did you
I think it was one of those things that I was trying to tease out names and it was just one that I really liked. I liked short names. Mm. I liked if you could sketch it out and see the brand. You know the way like you put Nike out, it just looks like the brand.
It's hard to define sometimes. It's hard to go, Maxi Loves. It's hard to kind of like go, I like that. Or I don't like that. There's something inbuilt.
It just fits with what you're doing. Mm. And I think, anyway, so we ended up having to add Loves to avoid the trademark issue. But people call it Moxie and that's fine by me because that's what I would love it to be. But we had to work with. I wasn't going to start challenging an Australian company who weren't trading in Europe but had the trademark. But you know, you could go down that road and I just wasn't going like the
especially
money.
Especially when you're starting off. I got a solicitor quoting me. He's like, oh, it'd be $2,000 to write the letter back. I was like, cool. And what happens then? He goes, well, they'll write me a letter back and then it'll be another $2,000.
And then
like,
we'll just keep going.
I'll write them a letter myself.
Yeah.
And I was like, how about this? And they're like, no.
No.
It's like, okay, changing the name. Like it's you're, simple. You're this big, like you're minuscule.
No. And people know that you won't have the money, so they'll push you along.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Once you get that, like that letterhead comes in, you're like, oh, I remember going on my birthday actually. I was like, oh shit.
So frustrating. Well, I had, even with Loves, Ireland reject my trademark application, but the UK accepted it.
Oh.
And it was quite funny because when I did Dragon's Den, this anonymous account at the time, I obviously now he's my trademark solicitor, but his Whoa. Name on Twitter is Trademark Ninja. And he tweeted me and goes like, why does Pamela and Moxie Loves have a trademark in the UK but not in Ireland? And I was like, well, actually, I've had extreme difficulty getting this trademark. And yeah. He's like, oh, well, listen, we'll link up. And now he's my trademark solicitor.
That's cool.
It's so funny. He did get it over the line everywhere now. It's global.
So on social media, he just pinged Jim's like,
yeah,
clever business generation.
Yeah, very.
I like that.
I know. Yeah, I love how that happened.
But you need that kind of serendipity. You need that kind of like,
yeah,
to be open to going, oh, this guy contact me, okay, I
yeah,
see if I can put that together. So you couldn't get the initial trademark?
No, not in Ireland.
Okay.
I found the office difficult actually.
Trademarks are pricey.
They are.
And people forget that, like you're pretty exposed.
And I just applied in the UK myself, like via the website. I didn't use a solicitor and I got it, so I knew then that I could get it.
Okay.
With somebody else applying, and he even said to me, look, it depends who applies, the day of the week you apply, like right, it can even come down to that.
Okay.
So at the time then I had all my artwork done and everything, so he reapplied and we got it.
Okay.
Yeah.
So then 30,000 units are shipping their way over here.
30,000 are on their way with an error on the label.
Oh.
Yeah, isn't that just great fun? Slight wording in the warning was wrong. So yeah, we had to
do not eat, do not like,
pretty much don't put it in the microwave and dry it, like that cat story. But
what happens?
We had to relabel 30,000 units.
No.
Well, not just 30, 60, because sure the other 30 had been produced anyway.
When did you tweak that?
When it was on the way. So basically when it's already made, I asked for like 100 samples to be sent kind of air freighted over so that I have something to sell with.
Yeah.
And I realized it then. Yeah. Yeah. Every word you can think of, yeah.
Bring me back to that moment because these stories are often so, like, they're so valuable because people don't really hear about them. We were chatting earlier about, like, failure and stuff. But they're those moments you're like, you can't even breathe.
You're just, no, you
like,
can't
get that
breathe.
Thing in your stomach and you're like, no. If I just stop for a second, it mightn't have actually happened.
No, it had definitely happened. And I remember.
Were you sitting there reading it?
Yeah. And the reason I noticed it was because you have to upload, it's like a cosmetics portal thing. I don't know how consumers find it because like it's impossible for me to find. But anyway, you have to do it for an EU regulation. Is when I went to copy the text from our safety assessor's report to the packaging. And I was like, oh no, it's like an old version. Like I hadn't, yeah. So got a label designed immediately. Now, luckily, the ingredients are normally on the back of the pack, like to the left. So it's like, right, we'll just get square labels done up, 60,000 of them.
Clever.
And just label.
You just label them. Label. To get the new packaging.
No, it wasn't going to happen. So we just labeled everything, which actually is done far more frequently in this market.
See, now that you said that, it's popping into my mind. You do buy some syrup and there is labels.
Or different languages or whatever it might be. So anyway, I just took it on the chin. Roped in everyone I knew. Like there were nights when I went to my friend's house and I would just bring a box. It's like 360 in the box.
She's coming over again.
And like, no, I do it like while chanting. Sometimes they helped. But otherwise, I was like, if I just bring it with me, like, you know.
That's hilarious.
It is kind of funny now.
Pamela's here with like 10 boxes.
Hi.
So that's smart though. How did you think of just relabeling them?
I have no idea. I don't even remember. It was probably in such a panic that I just thought, well, like, what other option do we have?
Jesus.
Yeah.
So they arrived, 30,000. Mm-hmm. Where did they even arrive to?
To my house. Well, no, actually, my boyfriend had, his dad had what I thought at the time was wares. It turns out it was just that door that a pallet would fit through in an industrial estate. It was like an office, but there was a door. And the pallets arrived, 10 pallets arrived to. 10 pallets arrived to his dad's office. And then I drove up and was like, oh my God. Like, I didn't even think it through. Like, how are we going to get from here to there? So I had like no warehouse, nothing. Some of them stayed there. Some of them came to my mom's salon. Some of them were at home under the dining room table. Like anywhere you can imagine, we had boxes just everywhere.
They're the best stories. They're the stories I love though. Like, cause that's real.
Yeah. And we were only like, we didn't label all 30,000 at once. It was like, okay, let's try and sell these and label as we go.
Okay.
But little did I know that we would get listed in Penny's in December or November.
Well, actually, give me the timeline on this, because actually we usually...
So this is the end of 2016. So okay. It arrived in about August or September. I can't remember which, but end of 2016.
Okay.
And I just started trying to contact pharmacies and found it really difficult to get anyone to reply to me.
Okay.
Much more than I thought. Like, I didn't really realize that the pharmacy market and the buyers are really interested in hearing from distributors who sell multiple brands. Don't have time
to buy like 20. Okay, what else you got on the...
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh. I went to Health Express, which was a group pharmacy. And the buyer, I met her in the square tall, I remember it, sitting in Costa. And she's like, yeah, I'd love to take it. They're like my first stockist. So excited.
How many?
Oh, like 12 a store or something. Like, I think they're like six stores.
That means it'll be 1,200.
Oh my God, it was like so exciting. And then I'd sent samples into Penny's. I got the name of the buyers in there. And right around the time...
That's big to start there. Like,
I knew that's where it belonged. I had a vision of it in the store. A genuine vision. I just knew it belonged there. Like, I could see it. I was like, this is where it would be. And I knew how supportive they were of Irish brands.
There's something in that, though. The visualization part you talk about there.
Probably.
It's a little bit fluffy. It's seen as very kind of wishy-washy. But there is something in visualization. You see, usually in sport.
Yeah.
More so in business. But I think there's something there.
I think so. And if you can make it easier for the store. So I knew that we had a little Euro hook, which is basically what can hang on a metal hook in a store.
Okay.
So instantly I knew from being in a salon... If it has to go on a shelf, you could be taking up too much room. Shelf space is so prime and difficult to come by. But Penny's have hooks everywhere.
Yeah.
Pharmacies have hooks everywhere. So I was like, I'm on a hook. Like, I'm not taking up your shelf. Like, it's a very easy spot for us to be in. We had a good footprint, if you like, as packaging goes. So, yeah, I just saw it in there. And right around that time when I sent it in, I heard nothing. And I was like, oh my God, like, what am I going to do?
Was this like your supplier hunt? You just literally... started knocking on doors, figuratively,
trying,
Googling and kind of going, okay,
emailing,
this is buyer.
Could not get. Yeah. Health Express, fine. Could not get anybody else. Got the names of the buyers and Penny's, sent the product in, heard nothing. Looked at a distributor and thought, well, I'm going to have to use a distributor. Like, I hadn't even built in the margin. I didn't even consider it. Like, because we were a distributor. So I just thought, well, we can do it.
Yeah.
Found out from somebody that in order to supply Penny's, you had to use one of their preferred suppliers, which is a lot of the cases with some big stores.
Okay.
Contacted one of them and they ignored me. And a friend was working in, they just totally ignored me, Emma. Friend of mine was working in like Green Isle Foods, and one of her old reps had gone to the sales department in this distributor. So it was like, okay, Pamela, here, give me your product. I'll bring it to them. Literally had a meeting and... Yeah, I really liked the guy. He came out to meet me and my mom, and really funny, actually, while we were sitting chatting, I said, are you parked across the road? And he said, yeah. And I was like, oh my God, you're being clamped. Literally, a guy had just put a clamp on his wheel. So mom looked at me and was like, I'd never done this before. We weren't talking about clamps earlier. Like, I've been clamped. I ran across the road and I was like, hi, oh my God, can you take the clamp off? And he just went, yeah, sure.
Really?
I was like... And meanwhile, my mum was back there saying to the guy, oh no, Pam will sort this out. Like, don't worry, you know.
She's
it couldn't have been better at the time. So he just took it off. That's mental. So the guy, I come back over and I'm trying to get this guy to distribute my brand, and he's just in awe.
Oh,
he's
sold out.
He's like,
he couldn't say
it.
No.
So it was like perfect. And right around that week, Penny's replied to me wanting to stock the product.
Wow.
I had the distributor there. Stock went in.
Wow.
I think Penny's took like 3,000 units to start. Flew off the shelves. I was really lucky. I should take you back at the time. When people share things on Instagram that weren't so curated. Someone sent you something cute. You just took a photo and it went on your feed. Like, it literally was that easy.
Mm.
A nice little layout. And people were like, oh my God, look at this. Boom.
Yeah.
Snap up.
Yeah.
So it literally took off on social media, the product, because it was so, like, it looked so different.
Mm.
And it was a great time. Look, I'm not going to... It's changed now. Absolutely. It's so much harder.
Hi, guys. Just popping on to talk about this lovely sale.
And then people would go into Penny's and go, look, here's that cool product. Snap.
Yeah, yeah.
Look at this. You know, and it...
Whereas now people tend to kind of switch off a little.
They
do. You can tell, which is
You
real.
Can tell. And everything is very pretty, which, look, I guess it's not as spontaneous and informal. It's much more of a business now. Which
I was
going
to ask you, how did it, you know, getting into Penny's? Fine, but how did it get off the shelf?
It flew off the shelf.
That's incredible.
It flew. And it was January of that year, I realized, okay, I have no stock. And then I was like, oh my God, Chinese New Year. Had no notion what Chinese New Year was. Yeah. I'm like, what do you mean New Year?
Yeah.
It's January, it's over.
Yeah.
No, January's like whatever. So I managed to get them to release the stock before they finished for New Year. So the other 30,000 were on their way. And I had enough money to pay for that. That arrived and we were selling it. And I was like, oh my God, like I have no money to buy more. I need to buy another 60 this time. Because I only got away with the 30 the first time.
Talk on that, because people often forget. Like, I'm sure we talked about this briefly. We're having a coffee. Pamela's loaded.
Yeah.
She's flying. She's sold. She's in pennies.
Yeah.
She's in pennies. Can you believe it? People forget, like, that money doesn't just... No one from pennies comes out to your house and goes, here's a big wad of cash.
No, like it goes through. You have terms, payment terms, stock. You know, you pay for stock. How long is the shipping from China? It can be 2 months. So you're waiting 2 months for the stock to arrive. You paid for it. Yep, you're also waiting two months for someone to pay you. And so it's growing broke, basically, which is obviously a better...
I love that. Yeah. Stealing that off you, thanks.
Yeah, you can take that. But it is it's a good problem, but it's still a problem. So I thought...
Exactly.
Yeah. Like, and I thought, well, what can I do? Should I do Dragon's Den? Why not? Like, wing it. Went for Dragon's Den, got it.
Are you kidding?
Ireland. Okay. Ireland. And I only had one product at the time. Brilliant 6 months of sales.
Yeah. But this is 6 months in.
Yeah. Oh, no, God. Like no problems. Right. Like, I mean, it's a perfect story, really. As I think back, I'm like, that is the perfect time to ask for anything ever.
Yeah.
Like I tell any business now, you're doing well. Go look for money then.
Yeah.
You don't need it then, but it's so much easier. You've no history worth worrying about, but you've got a good enough track record.
Yeah.
So when you're winning, that's when you need to look for funding, not when you really need it. And that was one thing I really... feel like I should have explored more at that time and tried to build a team when everything was good, because obviously there are highs and lows in business and we'll get to that. But
6 months in though, I wouldn't be too hard on yourself. It's very hard.
It is hard.
Oh, it's just going to keep going.
But then the blind belief. I did Dragon's Den. I got 3 offers of investment and I accepted it on the show thinking this was the best thing ever.
What was that like? What was that? Because it's so weird. The guys last week from Simply Fit Food.
Oh yeah, they did.
They did it as well.
Yeah.
It sounds tough.
Do you know what? Having done The Apprentice, it's not tough at all.
The Apprentice sounds incredibly tough.
The one thing I'll say is I did a bit of training before I went in. I went to communications clinic. Someone suggested to me, because they do like politicians training.
Okay.
And I learned very quickly that you can really control an entire pitch based on what your last sentence was.
Interesting.
So if you leave something out, it's a natural way they're going to ask. And so then you end up manipulating the whole conversation.
You bring it where you want to go. That's really
so I actually knew the entire pitch and it went exactly the way it should. Except there was one thing I didn't expect, which was that the makeup artist had been using my product on the 3 girls. I had no idea. That was not like a setup, but they were like, oh my God, this product, we'd just seen this.
Wait,
on Dragon's Den, the makeup artist behind the scenes had been using my product. So like I couldn't have planned for that, but that was only good. Like it was.
That's such validation.
Total validation. So it was so extremely positive. The sales were good.
Yeah.
My projections were good, but I think a few people pointed out that we'd need a lot more money, which was absolutely true and definitely the case. I was looking for €50,000. Like that was not going to make much of a dent.
Yeah.
How
much were you willing to give away?
I think I gave away 28%. I think I was looking to give away 15 or something. Okay.
In your head, had you a figure? Because I love watching it, especially the UK.
It's great.
And you just see some of them just completely shit the bed.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, they've given away like nearly 50% here.
I know.
Like 40, 50 grand.
The one thing that I remembered from watching it was everyone slips up on the valuation. And I then kind of realized figures are not my thing, but that if you... whatever you ask for and whatever percent you're going to give away is your value. Like I didn't really think about that until I started watching lots of the show and I realized, well, what can you value it at realistically?
Yeah.
And whether I really needed the money and I needed the investment, but whether you do or you don't want that to be the focus of the entire pitch, them tearing apart your, you know, your terms.
They probably sense it as well. They probably know, she's got stuck in the way. She's probably a bit...
And I think the producer of the show loved to show... You means you're valuing your company at 4 million, you know, and that's what the whole pitch becomes.
Yeah.
And then I wanted it to be, look, if this goes wrong, at least I'll have my product on show for all the people watching. You know, that was my backup. Yeah. And so, yeah, like I think it's 28.5 or something percent in the end I gave away at the time.
Okay. And what happened?
I met them after. So one person never showed up to the meeting. I don't want to say who, but so the three I had was Gavin Duffy, Eleanor, and Chanel McCoy.
They went in together?
They all went in together. Oh, split. Right.
That's a lot.
Yeah, which seemed great at the time, but now I know what three people are like, as in trying to get three people together.
People like that stature as well.
They're busy. Yeah. And it's a lot less of a share and a lot less of an interest. So therefore a lot less of their time. Yeah, and I learned that. It's not three business minds. It's three people divided, quite watered down, if you like.
And they're strong characters. They got where they are by being strong characters.
Absolutely.
I think there's an element of on when you watch it, you're like, oh, Pamela's walking out with a big check for 50 grand there.
Sweet. Doesn't work like that. And during the due diligence on my end, meeting them and realizing that we'd had two meetings now and one person still hadn't came to any of the meetings.
Yeah.
This is my future.
Just a no-show or just emails wasn't not responded around. Or blah, blah, blah.
Just wasn't available. Not much of an excuse. And so I felt like, imagine trying to get money from all three.
Yeah.
Trying to get people to sign off on things. Like, is this my future?
Because they're your partners at the end of the day. People forget that. They're not investors. Yeah. They're partners.
Yeah. And so I walked away.
Good.
Yeah. But right around the same time, because obviously you film it and then it airs. So when it aired, just before it aired, I walked away. Or just after it aired, I walked away. And my distributor offered a kind of a hybrid deal of, this is what we do as your distributor today. This is what we could do tomorrow as your investor. We could take off away from you all the ordering from China. We could handle the logistics. We can advance fund the stock. So it seemed like the perfect little package. It was a really good stopgap for like not having cash, but it wasn't really a scalable model because in turn, I didn't realize that I was up at 5 a.m. I was awake on Sundays. I was on email all of the time.
Okay.
I realized when I went to Korea, just to do an exploring mission on the skincare market. It was Good Friday and it was Easter Monday, I think. No one had responded to China from Thursday. And I was on a different time zone. I couldn't get anyone to respond. I couldn't get checks released. Nobody was there, everyone went home because they're 9 to 5. Right. I'm not 9 to 5.
Did you go with that model? You decided?
I did.
Okay.
And it did not work. So before I knew it, I pulled back ordering from China myself. And then it just became like a loan nearly, and there was no scaling mentioned, there was no expansion export. It was more of like an extra cut that they got of the sales, and it just felt like we were completely opposite directions. And yeah, I probably stayed a bit longer than I should have.
What timeline was this then?
This was April, May of 2017.
Okay.
So
what happened very fast for you?
It happened so fast. I mean, the sales were still doing great and we launched another product. We actually launched exclusively in pennies with that product. We expanded into the UK in 2018, launched into Primark, launched into Boots, and then that seahorse gripping a cotton bud.
And that was part one. Next week, discover how a photo taken thousands and thousands of miles away had a butterfly effect, almost sunk Pamela's business. It's a really good story. So I'll see you next Thursday at 6 a.m. for part two of my chat with Pamela Laird. See you then.